welcome to Temple of Health Radio Show. This is Dr. Susan Kolb, and today I'm pleased to have as my guest Dr. Mark Thurston, whose book, Discovering Your Soul's Purpose, Finding Your Path in Life, Work, and Personal Mission, The Edgar Cayce Way. This is the second edition of a book that was written many years ago, and it's really, I think, a very important book because the majority of people on Earth probably do not really understand that they have a unique soul's purpose here. They get caught up in daily life and all of the different distractions we have, especially now with the age of the internet. And it may be a surprise to some people that true happiness is probably not related to material possessions or status or the right job, but actually to finding your soul's purpose. Welcome, Dr. Thurston. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thank you for having me on the show.
So would you like to give the listeners a little bit about your background and how you became familiar with Edgar Cayce's work?
Oh, sure. Well, my academic background is in psychology. I did all my degrees in psychology. And when I was a college student, I came across Cayce's philosophy and holistic health principles, and they were really helpful to me as I was an emerging adult. I ended up living and working at the Edgar Cayce Center, the Association for Research and Enlightenment, for more than 30 years. For the last 8 years, I've been a faculty member at a big public university in Virginia, just outside Washington, D.C., George Mason University. Mm-hmm. And I'm having a chance to bring some of these ideas about the science of well-being and mindfulness and life purpose to college students in academic courses.
Well, that's great. Probably 30 years ago, that might not have been possible.
I think you're right. I think we're really
Cayce was very controversial for his time, mainly because of the way in which he was doing trance channeling, which meant that he was not quite conscious when he was channeling. And
was both the way the information came and then some of the rather radical ideas that are a little more accepted today.
Right, reincarnation and idea that we have a lot of spiritual help available that in general we don't know we have, which is great. So in terms of the first book the book that you wrote earlier, Discovering Your Soul's Purpose, what was your understanding of what Cayce was bringing through then about that topic?
Well, I think both the original book from 1984 and this new edition that's coming out this week from Random House are both based on kind of an approach that Cayce seemed to use when he gave individual advice and counsel to people who were looking to find meaning in life. So to that extent, both the first and the second edition follow a similar template that he seemed to follow when he gave that advice. I think with the second edition, I'm able to bring in some of the more modern research about the science of happiness and how we find meaning in life and kind of give it a little more contemporary flavor.
It's also more of a workbook. There's definite exercises you can do.
Exactly.
That help you, get to where you can discover what your soul's trying to show you about your potential. And I like the idea that your potential isn't just one thing, and then if you miss it, you've missed the boat, and too bad, so sad, you know. But it's an evolving thing that has a life of its own.
Thank you. And I agree. I've tried to design the book so that it's got, intellectual content to it, but there's lots of exercises that make it real practical.
Right. So let's go back just a minute. Some of the listeners may not know about Cayce. You want to give a little bit of the background of Edgar Cayce, and I've actually met David Wilcox in person. We were at the same Truth Convention as lecturers. I was lecturing on the FDA, and he gave a whole day of lectures on all sorts of really fascinating things, and there seems to be some evidence that David Wilcox is a reincarnated Edgar Cayce. So it was
pretty controversial.
He certainly looks
I'm not in the camp that agrees with that, but let me tell some of the facts about his biography.
He lived in the last part of the
19th century. The first half of the 20th century is when he did most of his work. And I think one of the remarkable things about Edgar Cayce, he was self-educated. He only went to school formally through 8th grade, which might have been typical of somebody born in 1877. And he was very devout. He was a rather conservative Christian. He read the Bible all the way through once for every year of his life. And he was a man of prayer and devoted to his church and discovered through a kind of unusual series of circumstances, including his own illness and loss of his own voice, that he seemed to have the capacity to move into a deep prayer-induced state of consciousness from which he could access wisdom about health and healing. And then later he discovered about a lot of other topics, including life purpose and dream interpretation and ancient history.
Well, he certainly brought in a lot of information about the different levels that disease can result from. We talk about, that disease can result from karma, which is something that was in some of Cayce's readings. It can result from emotional or attitude, and then it can also result from the environment, or especially today, toxic environments.
Yeah.
I take care of women with who have leaking or defective breast implants, so most of theirs is environmental. But I thought it was so fascinating that in your book you mentioned that a couple of times Cayce, when somebody was fairly ill, referred to the point that if they did not really have a purpose or a plan for the rest of their life, that they may not recover. I thought that was fascinating.
He was kind of famous for this rhetorical question of why do you even want to get well? Is it just
I think that's a really important question
that made you sick in the first place?
Exactly. Well, that may actually be a lot of the reason why they got ill. I've always felt that depression, for the most part, other than some chemically based depressants that can occur from biotoxins, from yeast, per se, but a lot of depression is when people get off their path and are in the wrong relationship, the wrong job, just the wrong path. And it's almost like the soul just withholds energy.
So in a lot of ways, Edgar Cayce was one of the pioneering figures in the holistic health movement. And in terms of seeing body, mind, and spirit as an integrated system and having a kind of a broad perspective of how consciousness and physical health interact. So lots of people since him have come along and refined this and added methodologies mm-hmm. that really are extraordinary tools. But he was a seminal figure back in the first half of the 20th century.
Yeah, when I read Cayce's work, I don't remember anything like it. It was so revolutionary to me. I was already a physician, but it just opened my eyes to a whole different realm of what can cause our health to, mm-hmm. to get impaired. And even accidents, even accidents aren't accidents. It's just fascinating that all the information he brought in.
Well, about two-thirds of his work, and for those that aren't familiar with his story, fairly early on when this remarkable intuitive sensitivity was discovered, people around him decided they should write down and actually transcribe things that he said when he was in this mm-hmm. altered state of consciousness. So we have the records of thousands and thousands of these readings that were given. About two-thirds of them are about the physical body and about holistic health.
Right.
And then about 2,000 of them are readings given to people who wanted to find their life purpose, and he was sort of mm-hmm. coaching them and counseling them about how they might go about that discovery.
So I think also the readings the time he dedicated to these readings may have been a little bit hard on Edgar's health. Do you think that was true?
Well, yeah, when he had readings given about his own health and well-being, especially in the last 2 years of his life, where he became rather famous, and was just slammed with thousands of letters coming in wanting readings.
Yeah.
And instead of doing two a day, he was doing 8 and 10 and sometimes more per day. And apparently it created quite a strain on the physical body to do that.
Right. It's very interesting.
And he died early. He died at 67 years old.
Right. That's right, he did. And I think it really was a strain on him. So when you I guess you were reviewing many of the readings that he gave about soul's purpose, what sort of patterns did you see in the readings that I guess led you to write the book?
Well, what I found was sort of a template of sorts, where he almost always encouraged people as a first step to get clear about their core values, and that everything had to be based upon having a sense of sort of priorities in one's life.
Mm-hmm.
And he called this setting a spiritual ideal. And
right.
So there's lots of emphasis on doing that foundational work. And then as sort of as a second step, he encourages us to get to know ourselves more deeply. This is largely, as modern positive psychology might put it, to get to know our strengths and our gifts and our talents.
Mm-hmm.
We tend to be so good at seeing our own faults and weaknesses, it really is an act of will to look for what our own gifts and strengths are. And he, with his clairvoyance, was trying to help people, as he gave them a reading, to see what some of those central gifts and strengths might be. But we can discover this for ourselves. And then he invited people to imagine how those gifts and talents might be used in service to the greater good, and how they might thematically shape sort of a mission statement that would be broader than just an occupation or a job, but more of a theme for how the gifts could be used in lots of different areas of life. He would give them then as a fourth step some practical things they could do to start testing it and applying it and putting it to work in daily life. And then a fifth step was he told people some of the signposts to look for that would reinforce and give them proof that they were on track with their mission. So the book's kind of, at least the workbook part of the book, is revolving around those five steps.
And it's interesting that you emphasize, and I imagine Casey emphasized, that some of your faults are actually some of your qualities, but kind of gone to excess or whatever. Would you like to give an example of that? Because that's something I think we all should ponder.
Yeah, I think that was a nifty bit of alchemy in his psychology, where we're invited to see that something that we criticize about ourselves may contain a strength, but we're using it in a selfish way, or we're overusing it, or misconstruing it. So somebody who's very impatient is sometimes a person who has very high standards and
mm-hmm.
is really committed to excellence. But because they overlay that with a kind of timeline or a limited sense of how quickly this can play out, it ends up being a kind of restless impatience.
It's interesting because a lot of information from the higher sources is that when we're fifth dimensional, when we think something, it immediately appears. So it may be that we're just used to being in that state and we're very frustrated that it takes so long to manifest things at this level, at the third dimensional level.
So that same principle can play out with lots of different things that we criticize ourselves for. I mean, it's not meant to be an excuse where we're just complacent and say, oh, I got all these bad features. It's an invitation to say, oh, maybe there's the seed of something lovely about me that's here if I can begin to use it in a more healthy way.
Right, that's true. So, how would you suggest that people go about, say somebody has no idea what their soul purpose is, no idea whatsoever, but feels that this concept is useful and wants to, wants to get an idea of what is going on? I mean, your workbook is in here, but can you just kind of give an example of what sort of exercises you mentioned dreams, meditation,
mm-hmm.
The actual exercises in here, but
yeah.
what would you recommend for them?
Well, I think it's helpful for us to take this idea from Casey's philosophy that we have both a shared mission in life, we also have a unique personalized mission. And all of us can get started today on what that shared mission is while we're in the process of trying to find our own sort of specialized version. So the shared mission has something to do with bringing hope and light into the lives of others. And we all have opportunities every day to lift the spirits of those around us. We all have opportunities every day to choose positivity instead of negativity. We all have opportunities every day to accentuate the good and be patient with that which is less than the good. So we can start the day on that shared purpose. Now, when it comes to practical steps to finding our own unique version of that, I encourage people to sort of keep a journal around little hints and signs that they notice. And among the exercises are what I call the psychology of admiration. Now, we're all familiar with this principle of projection, where the faults we see in others are our own faults. And okay, that's probably true. But just as equally true is that the good we see in other people is probably in ourselves as well, or we wouldn't recognize it. So beginning to make note of the things I admire in other people around me and start asking myself, do those same traits also live within myself? I think we can also, as you mentioned briefly a moment ago, be watching our dreams. Now, a lot of our dreams are showing us the patterns that get in the way of our life purpose, the psychology of limiting ourselves and the way in which we let our wounds sort of control us rather than our higher self. But we also have dreams that give us little hints about our positive potentials. And I think if we'll be students of our dreams and write them down, we're going to get little reminders about some of our gifts.
Yeah, I think it's also helpful to understand that some of the spiritual lessons are more universal, too, that if you're having a lot of trouble with being overly upset about what people think or say or what they think about you or say about you, the bullying epidemic now, that there is a spiritual lesson of detaching from that and not worrying what people think about you, not really, you know, just detaching from it and doing like you said earlier, being kind, being supportive, being all of those things. But if somebody misconstrues that or criticizes you for something when you're just trying to help them, you can just let it go because you're not you've done your best, and if they're in a bad place and can't see that, then maybe they just need to not be in your life.
So there's a kind of opportunity, isn't there, in even these adverse situations that we run up against?
Yeah. Well, we're all at very, very different energetic levels. And I think Casey kind of alluded to that with some of his writings where, energy is really determines relationships. So if you're really high energy, very, very spiritual, you may not be getting along well with people who are very material and very, very, no belief whatsoever in the spiritual. And the energy that is around you in your field will actually fight with theirs sometimes. So just being aware that these energetic differences exist, and I'll give you an example, in the operating room. You're in there for sometimes 17 hours with the same people. And I noticed that some people in the OR just love to come into the OR with me. They love to talk. We talk about spiritual stuff. And then other people think I'm the devil and ask never to come into my room. Isn't that interesting?
Wow.
You see,
bad for the patient who's having to deal with some of that.
Well, the patient's asleep, so hopefully that's not an issue. But the point is that we like attracts like, as you know. But if you've got something like the operating room where people are assigned there, or you don't have a choice, you're assigned to a room, say in the hospital or something. But I noticed it's very, very true that like a certain patients, just think I'm horrible, and all I'm trying to do is help them. I mean, I extend the same level of help and care to every patient that comes in, irregardless of where they are. But some people think I'm wonderful and that they can't get what I offer anywhere else because I use applied kinesiology. I treat all of the co-infections. I treat all the toxicities. I really try to get them better. I even treat the emotional stuff if it's there. But other people walk in the office and decide I'm the devil. They decide I'm the worst doctor ever. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, it really is.
I think it's energetic. I mean, that's what I'm saying. I think it's energetic. So if you're a high-energy person born into a low-energy family, you're often bullied. You're often made fun of. Do you see? So the whole thing could be energetic.
You know, my university students, and my courses are all elective courses, so people are in the course because they want to be in there. And so particularly the course around mindfulness and meaning, has students mm-hmm. who really want to find their life purpose. And they're, 21-year-old, 22-year-old, and a lot of them are having to work in fairly kind of menial service jobs just to be making some money to help pay tuition. It's not their dream job by any stretch of the imagination. And it's really challenging for them as they're trying to work on being more aware and more holistic in their thinking to often find themselves 20 or 30 hours a week in jobs where that kind of thinking isn't supported at all. It really
That's
is a challenge
true.
For them.
Yeah, it is. It is, but it also, I worked those jobs during that time frame too, and it actually is, there is some degree of character building in those jobs. I mean.
Yeah, or at least the potential for it.
Right, okay, very good, very good. I mean, I felt that they were important to my my development and my work ethic, even though they were, slinging hamburgers or other mm-hmm. menial jobs. But in all service jobs, like if you work at Starbucks, if you work in a restaurant, you're still interacting with people. And so you can make that a really pleasant experience. You can uplift people. You can do all of the things that you were talking about before, the service aspect of your shared purpose.
Yeah, I agree.
It doesn't matter what the job is, really, other than maybe if you're a computer programmer and you got yourself in the computer, you're not interacting with anybody.
One of my favorite examples of this is a man who was told in a case he reading that his life purpose as a mailman involved mm-hmm. lifting the spirits of people he met throughout the day. This was in the days mm-hmm. when you knew the mailman.
Like the
modern mailman story. But he would come to the door and he knew his people, and there would be these
little
30-second
okay.
conversations with 200 people in the course of the day.
Yeah.
And his mission had something to do with what happened in those 30 seconds with those folks.
Well, you can change a whole person's day in 30 seconds. You really can.
Yeah,
our mailman's great here. I mean, he actually comes into the building, so we interact with him. So I think those people are still out there. some people are, and I guess we can address this because you probably see it in your classroom. There is a little bit of a problem now with healthy socialization compared to, say, when we were growing up, because of the isolation that the electronic mm-hmm. world puts people in, mm-hmm. where they're just playing video games or on Facebook all day and not really interacting with people. What do you see in your realm with that? Do you think people are sometimes...
Well, I see a huge range of emotional social intelligence from...
Mm-hmm.
Some who are remarkably gifted in this regard, more so than I saw when I was a college student, to mm-hmm. others who are so isolated by the way electronics walls them off,
mm-hmm.
almost in a really scary way. And I think we've really got to develop tools to cultivate social and emotional intelligence throughout the university system, just throughout our culture. And that really helps equip people to be able to live their life purpose. Because even if you figure out your life's purpose via psychic or your own meditation experience, if you can't then get out in the world and live it, it's not that good just to know what it was.
Yeah. Did you ever see the commercial on TV about social anxiety disorder and the pill that you could take to get over it? I thought that was...
No, I don't think I've seen that.
It was, well, I mean, I'm sure that social anxiety does exist, and I'm sure that there are pills that can help with it. But the idea that it is so prevalent that they would actually spend a large amount of money advertising on national TV is very interesting.
Yeah.
But I think that would not have happened in our day, you know, in our 30 years ago. I don't think that would have happened. Because I think social anxiety is something that's much more prevalent now than it was before. Also, just the whole, we didn't have ADD, we didn't have, I think a lot of the problems that I'm seeing in the millennials and younger generation are a result of toxicity. Antimony, for example, can cause ADD, and if you do a detox of antimony, a lot of times they can get off their ADD drugs. And autism, of course, is almost certainly caused by the vaccinations and the heavy metal toxicity associated with that. So we really have tried to poison a whole generation of people.
So even though the poisons and the toxins may be different now than they were in the 1930s, say, when Edgar Cayce was doing his work, I think the fact that two-thirds of his life work was around the health of the physical body is still really instructive. And that we can't do deep mental health work and spiritual health work unless we're also purifying and cleansing and attuning the physical body.
That's true. I mean, anybody who's been chronically ill can tell you that. It's very difficult to meditate, to do any significant spiritual work. You can't fast if you are debilitated. I mean, you just can't. You'll get sick. I mean, you'll start passing out. I have people that try to do that, and I tell them not to because, you know, fasting is something that is kind of hard on the body, even when you're healthy. You know, if you do an extended fast.
So maybe those people need to do a psychological fast,
right.
Or fasting from their smartphone for 24 hours.
Yeah, there you go. Going on a retreat for 3 days and not doing their emails. So, that's true.
Yeah.
So what else can you let the audience know about the process that one can go through to discover a soul's purpose or to help a teenager or someone in their early 20s who seems to be floundering?
Well, I certainly see my share of those. I try to emphasize social support. I think it's really important that one have a mentor or a small group of friends who share interests around some of these topics. And it doesn't have to be somebody who tells you what your mission is or tells you what your career path ought to be.
Right.
As much as somebody or a small group of people that really stand in support of your search and your process.
Mm-hmm.
I actually think one of the most valuable things I do with my academic classes at the university is students meet fellow students who share some of these interests and develop friendships outside of class that, you know, tend to keep some of these things sustainable in their lives beyond the semester. So
I would encourage
everybody to find their group or to find their person who's going to be their partner in this kind of work.
Right. I can give you an example of that. I was at Johns Hopkins as a pre-med student, and my best friend there wanted to be a plastic surgeon, and she was just fascinated with plastic surgery, and we talked about it all the time, and she told me all this stuff, and we were doing research in it and everything, and then she ended up getting a rare disease called Wegener's granulomatosis, which I've since discovered the cause of, which is great, but she ended up going into ER medicine because surgery was way too difficult, you know, for her. She was on steroids and had other health limitations.
Yeah.
And so that's a perfect example of having her, and she really befriended me. It was like she just, you know, we just met one day and we just became instant friends. So I think that she was put in my path to lead me toward plastic surgery.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Even though she was not able to, you know, to do that for herself.
Right.
And that does show you that health issues do cause you to veer off from what you want to do. It really does.
Yeah. I think it's also really important, just kind of coming back to key or core advice that I would give people who are interested in finding deeper meaning in life is mm-hmm. to maintain some kind of a mindfulness practice every day. And we can have different tools in our toolbox, so to speak, about how we do that practice, because on different days we have different energy levels or different inclinations. Mm-hmm. But to have some kind of contemplative activity in one's life in which we sort of put the linear, logical, busy brain on hold for anywhere from 5 to 25 minutes
mm-hmm.
and invite a deeper kind of integrative process to happen in the body, to invite the intuitive mind to come forward and play a role. I think this is just critical. It's the regularity of it, even if it's just for 5 minutes a day. I think
right.
it's really, really important.
It really is. You get all sorts of information that really helps you out. I mean, it saves you money, it saves you time, it saves you bother. And I wanted to tell you another technique that we used just yesterday. It was interesting. One of my employees came to me and wanted to know if she should go to nursing school. And I said, well, let's muscle test. Have you heard of applied kinesiology?
Oh, yeah, yeah, sure.
We use it quite a bit here, and it's extremely accurate. I mean, it's so accurate that I'm able to remove foreign bodies that are about the size of a quarter to an eighth of a millimeter using nothing but applied kinesiology, if you get my drift. Nothing.
Yeah.
They're somewhere in the body. I find them only with applied kinesiology. So I know scientifically it's 100%. And for the future things, of course, it's not 100% because we do have free will. But she came to me and she had a number of questions, and many of my employees do this because they see us muscle testing all day long for the patients. And I muscle tested. What I do is I muscle tested her, and I say, you know, I say to her, you know, say your name, and she says her name, she's strong, and then I say, my name is Charlie, and it's weak. So that establishes that she's not backwards in her polarity. And then I just, in my mind, give the different things, like she should go to nursing school, she should go, increase her education in healthcare administration. It was about four or five things that came to mind. And nursing was very weak, and admin was very strong. And running a nursing agency or a healthcare agency was very strong, and, you know, something else was very weak. So I think that is her soul communicating with her through muscle testing. So that's
mm-hmm.
that's something that if you know somebody that can do applied kinesiology, and a lot of naturopaths and chiropractors and holistic doctors and holistic psychologists, you know, can do this for you.
So do you think you can get the same information just from one's own meditation life?
Well, I think it depends on the person. I think if you are absolutely unable to quiet your mind, it may be more difficult. You know, a lot of us just take for granted that, I mean, I always meditated. I meditated even when I was a child. I think really a lot of the population can't quiet their mind. And then you could tell them, though, that the dream journal thing, I think the dream journal and the paying attention to the dreams is always available to everybody.
Yeah.
But meditation, probably, you know, higher energy people, but mm-hmm. not everybody can meditate.
Yeah, well, or we need to broaden the definition maybe of what meditation can include. Like some people find a walking meditation.
Oh, yeah, no, that's
true.
The
body is necessary. Yeah.
That's why so many businessmen play golf. I'm convinced of it. Don't you think? I mean, I think that's probably
what
they do.
Well, I really love golf. It's very meditative for me.
It's very meditative, yeah. No, I mean, any of the walking meditations, I mean, Qigong or Tai Chi or any of the very, very yoga. I mean, you go into altered state of consciousness when you do yoga. But some people have this, I guess I would say it's a block saying that feeling they can't get information that way. And as long as they have that block, they usually can't. So, but I think that when you're in nature, when you're not thinking about your own problems, when you're just, kind of in a relaxed state, even if you're playing the piano or painting a picture, that's when information does come in.
Remember when I was talking about these five steps that I see as a kind of template for how Edgar Cayce counseled people about life purpose? And the first step was about clarifying core values and ideals.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's because, and Cayce was pretty explicit about this, when we're getting guidance, whether it be an impression that comes in meditation or a dream that comes up, we always have to evaluate it, because we can get stuff that is just wish fulfillment, or we can get stuff that is just based on our fears.
Mm-hmm.
And we need some kind of discerning or some way to kind of filter or evaluate the information. And I think
right.
that's why having our core values clearly in place is really a crucial first step.
Yeah, and like what I was telling my employees, the qualities that make one a great nurse are very different than the qualities that make one a great administrator. Do you see what I mean?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So you're, the section in your book where you identify your strengths and your weaknesses, I think that's very important when you're choosing a career. Because unless you're going to become what we call a clipboard nurse, which is just an administrator nurse, which is just an administrator, but why do you have to go all the way through nursing school to do that?
Yeah,
'cause you can
right.
do that without doing all of nursing school. Those qualities are very, very different, as you know.
You know, one of the things that happens in today's world is that people are likely to have multiple jobs, maybe even multiple careers over the course of
mm-hmm.
40 or 50 years.
Right.
And I think it makes it all the more important to kind of find a common theme or thread that might run through different occupations that we have. So, for example, if I just think about my own life right now as a university faculty member, it's different than what I was doing in my 30s, but is there a common theme around education, or is there a common theme around trying to create structures for people to discover new things about themselves? And that's generally the way Edgar Cayce describes somebody's life purpose. It was more this kind of broad thematic thrust rather than saying you're going to be a butcher or a baker or a candlestick maker.
And for you, you could not have entered the university system with the knowledge that you had unless it was a very exceptional university years ago. I mean, that just wouldn't have happened. So you had a particular path where you learned about the spiritual psychology and the consciousness research that you participated in, and then
yeah.
later brought that to the university system. So
yeah.
timing is also very important.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, you can't change what is in terms of society. One person rarely gets the opportunity. Jesus did, of course, but rarely gets the opportunity to change a society. And sometimes you just have to wait your turn until you won't get booted out of somewhere.
Yeah. Timing is really important. And that's why patience and sensitivity
patience,
to the rhythms
exactly.
of life is critical.
Yeah. Well, would you like to give your contact information?
Oh, yeah, the easiest way to reach me is just markthurston.com, and that takes you to the course leader page for a nonprofit that my wife and I run, which stands alongside the university but is not directly in the university. And then, this new book, Discovering Your Soul's Purpose, is just coming out this week, I think the 20th of June, which is,
mm-hmm.
what, Tuesday of this
Great.
Week is the actual publication date.
Well, I can tell the listening audience that this book is really one of the best books I've ever seen on finding your soul's purpose. And I think finding your soul's purpose may be the most important thing that you do in life, unless you already know your soul's purpose. But even if you do, like I've got a pretty good idea of what I'm doing. But this this book has been eye-opening even for me, especially the different sections on self-awareness and looking at how you can further the common goals of all of what we're supposed to be doing here.
Yeah. Well, thank you for those kind comments. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome. Well, we're coming up on the end of our hour. Would you like to give a message to people about what they can do and expect for when using your book?
Yeah. Well, maybe I can encourage two things. One, I hope that people who are not familiar with the story about this remarkable man, Edgar Cayce, would be curious and find out a little more about him. There's a whole organization that's been around for 80 years that has lots of resources online. It's just edgarcayce.org. And Cayce spelled C-A-Y-C-E. And I think they'd find some really lovely resources that way. And then I think in terms of the themes in the book, I would encourage people to embrace that which are the strengths about oneself. It's just a psychological fact that we're constantly criticizing and attacking ourselves in our self-talk, in our doubts and fears, and things that we can do that begin to accentuate positivity, I think, is transformational. Some of that is just the way we talk to ourselves. Some of that is the way we choose friends or choose what we're going to watch on TV or what we're going to read. So things that really begin to believe in ourselves more deeply, I think, is the most important part of the message that this book is about.
Yeah, I really agree with what you were saying. To watch really violent movies and play violent video games all day long is not going to increase your energy level. It's not going to help you cope with what's out in society. It may even lower your energy level to the point where you attract things that aren't very pleasant. So, it may be okay every once in a while to go out to the movie to see some blockbuster thing that has violence in it, but to really immerse yourself in that day after day is not helping your soul's purpose or soul's growth.
we have a mental diet and nutrition just like we have a physical diet and nutrition.
Exactly. Yeah. That's very, very true. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. It's been a delightful conversation.
Yes, Dr. Cole, thank you.
We've been talking to Dr. Mark Thurston, Discovering Your Soul's Purpose. Please do investigate Edgar Cayce's work. I found it to be absolutely life-changing for me. Next week, we have Michael Bell, The Invisible Crime, Part 2, and then Tom Palladino on Scalar Energy the week after that. Please join us next week for Temple of Health Radio Show.
Headaches, back pain, migraines, joint pain, nothing worse than the nagging, unending discomfort of daily aches and pains. If you have pain and are looking for more natural solutions to eliminate your pain, Millennium Healthcare is for you. Millennium Healthcare's professionals will work for you. For help or more information on natural pain relief, call Millennium Healthcare at 770-390-0012. That's 770-390-0012. Millennium Healthcare. Pain relief naturally.
Don't you just hate trying on bathing suits? Wait a minute, you look great. Plastic surgery?
Not surgery. I got an endermology treatment from the experts at Plastikos.
What's endermology?
Endermology is the terrific non-surgical treatment that Europeans have been using for years to tone skin and contour the body. Endermology by Plastikos feels great, and you can see the difference it makes.
No kidding. Who do I call?
Plastikos, a leader in plastic and reconstructive surgery, is the number one center in Atlanta offering endermology. For more information and a complimentary consultation and treatment, call Plastikos at 770-457-4677. Plastikos Endermology Skin Toning and Body Contouring, 770-457-4677.